Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. Two big shows this weekend between WWE and Night of Champions in Saudi Arabia on Saturday and AEW on Sunday with their big pay-per-view event featuring the Four Pillars in the main event. So we'll get to our predictions on both of these shows, Les, but before we do any of that, music is near and dear to your heart as it is mine, so I thought you might have something you want to get off your chest regarding the passing of two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Tina Turner earlier this week.
Man, one of my most favorite entertainers in the music business, seriously. And like I said to you before we started recording, if there's a legitimate legend or icon, it would be Tina Turner. What? If she didn't captivate a room, a city, what is it? The concert from Germany. It's on, I forget, I think it's What's Love Got to Do With It. It's on, or probably Proud Mary is on YouTube.
Oh, sure.
But that, I don't know how many thousands of people were at that concert, but you just, how she is, she mesmerized people. But I became a fan, as I said to you, in 1961, when she was still with Ike Turner, and the song was Things Gonna Work Out Fine. A young wrestler by the name of Flash Thomas played that over and over and over and over again on his portable 45 RPM record player. And I thought, who is that? And he told me it's Ike and Tina Turner. I'd never heard of him up till that point. And yeah, so yes, been a huge fan of Tina Turner. And I still listen to her stuff. You know, I have been all along. 83 years old. And what an entertainer. And you're right, two-time Hall of Fame. And if they put her in two more times just for being her, I'm cool with that as well. But yeah, she will certainly has left a big void in the R&B music field, has she not?
Oh,
you're the disc jockey. Talk to me.
Oh, my goodness. No, without question. Over 180 million records sold worldwide. But I mean, it's really the live performance aspect that she had like no other. I mean, I saw some video this week of Oprah and Beyonce meeting her for the first time and giggling and jumping up and down, literally like school children, having the opportunity to meet and, in Beyonce's case, work with Tina as she did at a show several years ago. The impact she had spans generations from fans of all different genres of music. I also saw a clip this week. I don't know if you caught this too. They dug up some footage of Janis Joplin on the Dick Cavett Show before Tina Turner was really a household name, before Ike and Tina were big. And Dick Cavett asked who her favorite singer was, and she said Tina Turner without hesitation. And Dick Cavett, because this was before they really became famous, was like, would you be disappointed if I told you I have no idea who Tina Turner was? And Janis Joplin said, no, I would not be disappointed or surprised, but it is a shame. And she went into this whole thing, chapter and verse, about Tina specifically, but the group in general, before they ever hit it big. She called it long before then.
No, I did not see that, but I wish I had. I'd love to see it. You knew she was a star the first time you listened to her, didn't you?
Oh, without question.
Yeah, and I'm certainly no music critic in any way, shape, or form. But yes, when I heard them, I thought, damn, I got to own that record. And yes, everything that she's done since, I'm a huge, 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 huge fan. And she, like you say, she's left a huge void in the R&B music world. And certainly when you talk about somebody being remembered with love and respect, it would be Tina Turner.
Without question. Yeah. And,
yes, sir.
And some of the things you've seen on TV this week would certainly speak to that. So we have a couple of big shows in the world of wrestling this weekend. Night of Champions, I figure, is where we'd start first here, Les, in terms of us discussing our predictions.
I want to touch base on something first.
Sure, okay? Go ahead.
On the board.
Yeah.
My cut and paste guy sent me a message this week. A couple fans were disgruntled with my comments about the brawl in AEW and about Ace biting someone, and I guess they felt I was barbaric or didn't know what I was talking about or this or that, the other thing. So I just very calmly want I am wrong. I have time. There are times I am wrong, not wrong about this particular thing, but I don't have that. I mean, a problem with being wrong, but maybe I understand this a little better than the casual fan. First of all, I'm going to tell a story before I get into that, okay, about my dear friend, the late Tim Woods, Mr. Wrestling. And he had a in Columbus, Georgia, on Wednesday night, there were these, I'll call them hoodlums, thugs, gangsters, whatever. No, I'm not talking about Tracy Smothers, the dirty white boy. These guys were legitimate from Alabama across the state line from Columbus, Georgia. Anyway, the one guy, they came to the matches, and they, you know, one guy decided he thought he was as good as any wrestler, and he challenged Mr. Wrestling Tim Woods. So on this particular night, two or three of his friends, or four maybe, I'm not sure, I don't remember the numbers, of the gangster's friends came, obviously, to the matches. So the other wrestlers came out to stand around the ring in the event that they, you know, got frisky when they found out that their boy was in way over his head, and he was. But anyway, as this thing transpires, the Mark, the fan that's in there with Woods, realizes he's in over his head, and he's not getting out of there, you know, looking like a champ. So at one point in this thing, Tim has turned him. He's got him on his belly, and he goes to cross-face him to hook him to finish it. And apparently the fan panics. And like I say, he realizes he's in over his head. And as Tim's hand comes across the fan's face, he opens and bites down on one of Tim's fingers, and doesn't just bite the finger, he bites it off through the bone, through the ligaments, through the skin, the whole nine yards. And as he spits it out, and this is not crucial to the story, but it is part of the story. He spits it out and hits on the apron in front of Bill Dromo and Lord Littlebrook, who were two of the wrestlers that were around the ring that night. But my point being here is the reason Tim had his finger bitten off was because it was in this fan's face. So my point is this, about Ace Steel wanting to bite Kenny Omega's hand. Okay, first of all, in a real fight, to those fans who are disappointed with me in this, there are no rules, or at least if there are, I've never heard them. And if you haven't ever been in a real fight, you maybe don't understand that, but there are no rules. But the first thing is, too, I can't believe that Ace would reach down and take Omega's hand and try to put it in his mouth. So my point is this, and I'd almost, again, having been involved in things like this, Omega's hand was in Ace's face. Why? I don't know. Was it to fishhook his mouth? Maybe. Hook his nostrils? Possibly. Take his eye out? And that does happen, believe it or not. I don't know. But Ace's reaction was to defend himself, and it happened up that way. So, and let me say this. When I heard about this, I have not talked to Ace about it. Haven't talked to Ace since it happened. Haven't talked to Punk about it. And certainly the Elite didn't call me and tell me this story. I heard it from a neutral party who, as far as I know, doesn't have an axe to grind with either side. But they were in the building. So I just wanted to clear the air on that. So what I'm saying is, I'm not saying it was great that Ace bit his finger, or that it's the thing that you should do. But I'm saying that Omega's hand was in Ace's face, or it would have never gotten bit. That's my point. I just wanted to clear the air on that. So now we go on with our lives, I hope, anyway. And I hope they understand that I'm cool with them, you know, having a comment about it. But I just, you know, I wanted to try to straighten it out.
Well, since we're on the whole Ace Steel thing, let's just start with AEW then. Before we get into predictions for this weekend's pay-per-view, let's talk about the fact that apparently things are all now once again copacetic. We had heard that Ace working from home was a potential sticking point, and that Punk may or may not be coming, to the point where the story was out earlier this week that Tony had reportedly tried to reserve Daly's place, which is essentially AEW's home arena in Jacksonville. The family owns the building. Just in case the United Center thing didn't work out, I did not say this on the air last week, so I realize it sounds like I'm saying I knew it all along when I didn't make this public, but I did say to you off the air last week, you can verify, that it would not shock me if this whole thing was somebody's idea, that it would drum up more interest, more press. I can't say more sales, because if you put the United Center on sale for with CM Punk returning, I don't think you really have to worry about that. But it's just something about the idea of having you constantly in that news cycle, which people these days think is good for business. And I said to you, I would not shock me if this thing has actually been copacetic for a number of weeks, and that everything magically irons itself out this week, which lo and behold, apparently it has. So I guess we can expect to see CM Punk at the United Center on June 17th. And I'm not going to say there's zero issues with Ace Steel working from home, but I'm not sure that it was ever an issue that was going to keep anybody from coming to work. After all, the man is still getting his full check. So why would that be too big of an issue?
Well, you know what? If somebody wants me to work from home,
hello,
send me a nice, healthy
please
check,
I would love to do
I'm
that.
I'm pretty cool with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you did that for a while, right?
Almost two full years, basically.
Yeah. 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 Yes. So, yes. But your point is, and I wouldn't disagree with you, and I think it's a strong possibility it's what happened, is that Tony Khan tried to add some drama where there was no drama, just to stir up a little interest. And it wouldn't be the first time, never mind Tony Khan or anybody else in the business. It happens. That's what goes on in this particular business. But yeah. So anyway, we are going to Chicago, and the show is going to move on. Ace has to stay home so he doesn't bite anybody else. I'm being facetious, obviously. But yeah, I don't know why he can't go to the building with Punk, but whatever. I like Ace. Got a hell of a sense of humor. He's been a friend for quite a few years, and I don't think he's not a psychopath or a sociopath, so he wouldn't kill anybody if he got there or try biting everyone, I don't think. Anyway, we could move on past that. So talk to me. What do you think? We're going to go Wednesday night, or we're going to go right to the pay-per-view?
Well, give me some thoughts on Wednesday night, because I'm thumbing through this media call Tony Khan had. He didn't exactly break a whole lot of news here. I was just looking to see if there was something worth bringing. Actually, you know what? There is one thing that I'd like to bring up with you, and you can bridge this into anything you want on Wednesday, and we can get in predictions after that. But Tony was talking about with the addition of AEW Collision here in a few weeks. He wants more people helping out with creative, which sounds like a welcome thing from here. And he mentioned QT, who we already knew was part of the process. Pat Buck, Jerry Lynn, Dean Malenko, Madison Rayne, Sarah Stock, the former Dark Angel or Sarita in TNA, BJ Whitmer, and Will Washington as those who are contributing from a creative perspective. And that he's also been leaning on Bryan Danielson more lately. Now, you look at that list of names, and there are more than a few people there who have a clue, but obviously none of them have the last word. Tony Khan does. But when I look at that brain trust, I think to myself, maybe the theory we floated here several weeks ago, the idea that this additional 2 hours of TV is maybe having Tony look at the situation and saying, okay, listen, I realize now that this is a lot, and it might be better for me to start delegating a little bit more. At least that's my hope. What do you think?
Yeah, I would hope you're right, because it is a lot for anybody. I don't care if it's the greatest booker ever, whoever that might be in the entire universe. It's a lot. You know, it's a lot to run, to have to keep worrying about and manipulating and putting all the pawns in the proper place and so forth and so on. Yeah, this list, I'll run it down for you name by name. QT Marshall, yes, I think QT, I've worked with QT. He's trained me before we ever worked together, but we have worked together. And yes, I wouldn't be a bit, I have a problem with QT being one of the guys with the input. Pat Buck, I don't think I've ever met Pat. I know Pat has a school. I know he uses a couple of my drills because I've seen the videos. I know he worked at Performance Center for WWE, so I would assume that I can, you know, safely say, yes, Pat Buck fits into the mix and would be someone that would be a good sounding post. Jerry Lynn, without question, yes, absolutely. Jerry, hell of a performer, hell of a guy, and has that kind of, background, and he is, yeah. I would use him without question. Dean Malenko, you bet your sweet ass, without question as well. Madison Rayne, I don't know. Quite frankly, I've never met Madison Rayne. I'm not all that impressed with her work, which is probably why I'm not sure about her as a trainer, which doesn't mean she couldn't be a good trainer. I won't sign off one way or the other because I don't have enough information or know enough about her to make a choice. I've heard some good things about Sarah Stock. Again, I don't know Sarah, so you know, I'll leave that up to somebody else. BJ Whitmer, without a question, I trained him. Damn right, he knows how, he knows why, and he knows he can do it. I believe the first producer that was hired by AEW.
No, I didn't know that.
Because of him being doing such a great job as a producer for Ring of Honor. And Will Washington, I don't know anything about. He's a fan. You know, yes or no, I don't know. He's not an ex-wrestler. He's not a current wrestler. He's a writer. He's a fan. Maybe he's got a – I don't know. But QT, Jerry Lynn, Dean Malenko, Whitmer, for definite, yes. And you know what I see there, too? And I forgot to mention Brian Danielson. Yeah, I love Dragon. Yes, I would say he'd be a wealth of information. What I do see there, or don't see there, which I think is probably a good thing, is I don't see Chris Jericho's name. I don't see John Moxley's name.
God, you know, I don't want to be the guy who throws cold water on it. I'm wondering if that's just understood at this point. They're not necessarily on the committee, if there was one, but that their input is always going to, you know, kind of like, you know, back in the day, Shawn Michaels and Triple H were not technically part of creative, but it was known that they were going to show up to the meeting whenever they had something they wanted to add.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, you're going to do your top, get the eyes you're using on top. Absolutely. You're going to get their feedback. You realize they're looking out for themselves. Everybody on this list is looking out. You know, it's all about making a living and maintaining, you know, paying your bills and so forth and so on. But, you always get input from the top guys. But, and why? Well, because I can go back, like, talking about Wahoo McDaniel or somebody like or Dusty or so-and-so. When they would change the territories, you know, they know how something worked for them successfully in another territory. So you get their feedback to do something similar in your territory. So yeah, it's, but yes, he needs help. He's needed help for a long time. We can argue about it, but I don't think there's really an argument. Having been a booker, having been a promoter, I realize that, the workload that he's presented himself with, I wouldn't want. I'd be holding my hand and say, can somebody help me here, please? So, yeah, it's about time, and I hope he leans on these people, when he needs to and realizes that, you know, it's probably going to make his company better in the long haul.
All right, so that's going to take us to these double or nothing predictions, unless there's anything in particular you want to touch on from this past Wednesday.
Well, I'd like to say a friend of mine who is Lady Frost, she and her husband, the Savage Gentleman, I worked with them. When was the last time I was at the Monster Factory? Do you remember?
Oh, how many years goodness. Before the pandemic,
four or five
right?
years ago?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But anyway, they came there, and we got to know each other there, and I was very impressed with their hard work, their dedication, their conditioning. And then they came to Charlotte when I did a weekend training camp there. A few months later, they traveled to Charlotte and trained with me there, and we've stayed in touch. But I was happy to see, and I think Savage Gentleman, Victor Benjamin is the wrestling name, has been on Ring of Honor. But I thought, first of all, I was surprised that Frost got as much offense as she did because the Valkyrie and Jade's big title match this weekend. But I was happy to see her get it. I think she, made a good showing, her first time on a major, on major TV. So I'm tickled to death for her. And her husband, both good people. They work hard. they love and respect the business. So I was happy to see that. You brought it up before we start recording, the video, the interviews, video packages that they're doing for this big, main event, the Pillars match, the four Pillars. Now, I'll be honest with you. I think everybody knows how this Pillar match is going to go, and we could all be wrong. But the other thing, I don't think it's going to be a great match just because it's going to be a hard match to work. However, I think the buildup is maybe the best long-term and taking your time buildup that I've seen in this company since its inception. How about you?
It is the kind of thing that we have been asking them to do forever and a day in terms of building up a match with these video packages over a number of weeks. And, you know, you can say what you want about how difficult a four-way will be, and it will be. But the idea that you get that many more video packages and that much more insight into what makes all four of these guys tick is, I think they have done about as good a job building up a main event with non-household names, or at least guys who weren't household names before this company started, as they've done since this company started. And I hope that they continue doing things like this, even if there are bigger, quote unquote, known names involved in the next series of main event matches in AEW. I would really like to see this kind of presentation continue as they build towards big matches on pay-per-views.
I would as well. Now, I think if the weakness to this is, like you say, with Jungle Boy and Sammy and my boy
Darby,
the Scottish lad who's going to climb Mount Everest.
Yes.
What? Are you out of your freaking mind? Whoa. These guys aren't Ric Flair, Ole Anderson, Blackjack Mulligan, and Roddy Piper on promos. They are not. And that probably would be, like you say, the weakest part of this buildup from my standpoint. MJF is a hell of a promo guy. What I would suggest to MJF, and he would probably turn me down and have some and burn me, which would be fine, it's time to, he is a sharp guy with his verbal assaults. It's just, it's old hat ripping on the town you're in and the people. Start getting a little more creative in terms of how you approach your promos with your opponents or your next opponent or or something you're getting ready to build up. Am I making sense?
You are. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, because the other thing is, I hate, what's the name of this town again? Knox. Yeah, I'll knock it. I'm knocking the fact I got to be here. It's, you know, it's stuff like that. It's old hat. Heel's been using this since before I got in the freaking business, for Christ's sake. I mean, it works, but you can wear it out. And for my money, I was really intrigued with his promos early on, but since he's leaned more toward that in recent times, or he uses that all the time, and there are times that it's just a matter of talking about your opponent, you know? And so that has been where he has had to have some discussion with these other three guys, I think has diversified him a little bit in that term. But yeah, I think the promos from Jungle Boy and the other two is, I popped when, was it Darby mentioned Sammy's gum chewing was clever. And I thought, you and I should talk. Sammy and one of the Bucks, I don't know which one of the Bucks it is that chews with his mouth open 100 miles an hour. They could have a gum chewing contest, maybe, or a bubble gum blowing contest or something. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, this is the best buildup, I think, for a main event that they have done thus far. I mean, they're taking their time and trying to actually lay down a strong story. And as if you're a listener to our show, and I have heard other people talk about it as well, it's like, this quick fix. Okay, Vic, I don't like you. Okay, let's have a death match or a cage match or something. What's happening in between? That's the finish, and we're talking about the start and nothing in between. And with this, at least there is something in between. But I don't think it's a secret that probably the majority of people figure that that MJF's going to leave the ring with the belt intact, don't you?
I can't imagine that's the expectation of anybody not named Jack Perry, Sammy Guevara, or Darby Allin.
I would think you're absolutely right. I would think that, yes. So with that in mind, should we talk about Double or Nothing?
Yeah, let's take a look at the rest of the card, since I think we're both in agreement. And I imagine most people who've been watching the show over the last few months as they've been getting ready for this are of the opinion that MJF is going to retain the title here. So let's work our way through the card in the, I don't want to say reverse order necessarily, but I imagine that the Hardys and their tag partner would be the place to start in terms of working our way up the card here. After discussing the main event, Ethan Page and the Guns are going to be taking on the Hardys and their partner, who was going to be Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party. Unfortunately, he appears to be injured. Hopefully it is nothing serious and completely storyline, but he had a neck brace on his Twitter feed the other day that did not look like your standard, like the one Bobby Heenan wore for months.
Right.
No, he had a serious, like, a more metal-ish kind of thing going on, hard plastic. So hopefully that was not as bad as it looked, but he will not be in this match. And spoiler alert here, because you're going to get this answer on Rampage later tonight, but the Hardys have recruited Hook as their third man for this tag match. And I don't think there's probably much a secret here that the Hardys and Hook are going to walk away with the win.
Yeah, I would think that's pretty certain. Yes. And you know what kind of match it's going to be.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't, you haven't been watching this show or this company or these guys at all. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the Hardys and Hook get their hands raised on this.
So you mentioned the debut of Lady Frost on Dynamite this past week against Taya Valkyrie, a surprisingly back and forth match in Frost's major TV debut, to her great credit. But curious, given Taya's got this big match with Jade Cargill. With the TBS title, obviously this is a rematch. The last time the two met, Taya was not able to use her finishing maneuver. That was part of the stipulations, and she was defeated in large part as a result of that. Jade's got this lengthy undefeated streak. Is now the time to pull the trigger on a new champion in Jade's first defeat, Les?
I don't know. I don't think putting the title on Valkyrie is... It's a lateral movement from Jade. In other words, I'm saying she may be a little more. I'm not high, as you know, or if you're a listener to the show, Jade is green. Call it whatever you like. She's green. I wouldn't put a belt on her to begin with. I mean, she's got all the potential in the world. She's just not there yet, and she needs to be led. I'm not sure Valkyrie can be the leader. She's a little hit and miss with me, timing wise. And it's little things probably that the average fan's not noticing, but I do. And it you know, sets off warning bells. She's not the smoothest worker in the world. I don't think this is going to be a match that you're going to say, wow, what a hell of a match. And I could be totally wrong, but I think the match will be a match. But I think, I don't know with this. Maybe it's time to... I don't know if Valkyrie is the one to do it with, but maybe it's time to, you know, to make Jade look a little like she's vulnerable, you know? I don't know. It's a hard call here because, I don't know. I would have thought maybe Jade would lose to one of the other girls that, you know, but maybe because of Tyra, her size, the look and everything. I've never seen her in person, but I was surprised. She's not as big as she appears to be on camera, because when I saw her with Frost, I know Frost's size. I stood next to her. Frost is not a tall woman at all. And so I was surprised. Damn, she's not as big as I thought she was. Anyway, I'm going to take a wild guess and say Jade retains here.
Boy, it's just tough for me. Like, where do you do with Taya if she loses two in a row here? I mean, obviously, you can figure out something, but where?
Yeah, you're making a point, and I'm looking, I'm letting my opinion of their quality of performance probably make more of a decision for me than what I should. And when you say that, it could go that way. It could very well go that way, and you're right. Two straight losses would not be cool.
Yeah, I mean, and losing here doesn't necessarily mean you're off the bandwagon if you're Tony Khan and Jade Cargill. It just means that I'm kind of painting myself into a corner with the newest addition to the ladies' roster. So it doesn't mean that Taya can't win this and we do it one more time. And Jade wins it back, but you don't, have Taya walk in the door and lose two title matches back to back. That just seems like a difficult position to put her in. And then I look at the rest of the roster, and I mean, there are options, but when I look at this, and I'm just like, well, then if it's not her, then who exactly? Who are you getting ready?
Yeah, well, you got a point there too. Yeah, you
You
really do. And at least if she got the belt, that gives them a rubber match, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. You can do it a third time, and if you put some time into it, in other words, put some distance between those
Yes.
between matches two and three, then it doesn't hurt Taya to lose it right to lose it back because she doesn't lose it right back.
Right. No, I agree with that too. All right. You know what? You're going to, okay, I'll go with you on this. See,
Okay.
you're so damn persuasive, aren't you?
We're both taking Taya Valkyrie. Now next week, Les will disavow this when Jade wins.
I'll say, I don't know what you're talking about.
So we've got the AEW International title on the line in a 21-man blackjack battle royal, and Orange Cassidy deciding that 20-something straight defenses in one-on-one matches was just not enough. He wanted all 20 guys in the ring at the same time, apparently. I have so many questions and so many issues that, this is only a 1-hour program, so I don't want to take up the rest of the hour talking about this whole thing.
This stupid match is
But
what you're about to say.
what, here's a, I'll just try and keep it as short and sweet as I can.
Go ahead.
Regardless of what either of us think about Mr. Cassidy, they have spent a lot of time telling this story. 20-something successful title defenses. The most successfully defended title in AEW, the most successful champion in AEW is Orange Cassidy. So you've put all this time into doing this, and then you put him in this 21-man match where it's possible, I'd argue even likely, he's going to lose the title, and nobody gets the benefit of pinning the most successful champion in AEW. Why? Why did we have 20 successful defenses if nobody's going to get a rub from actually beating the man?
Well, here's my thought in another direction. Big Bill is in this match, right?
Right.
Brian Cage is in this match, to name two guys. But there are, and that leaves 19 more, and Cassidy is going to go through this whole thing to hang on to his title.
Well, see, now thank you for bringing that up because that was actually where I was going to go next. After 20-something defenses, then he beats 20 guys in one night. Like, just retire the title. Give it up. What is there left for him to do?
Yeah. Well, maybe go call Roman. Okay.
I suppose, well, I guess, you know what? There's an example of a guy who's beating everybody. That's fair.
Yeah. And they look a lot alike,
Oh,
don't you?
sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
No.
they
Yes. And I am being facetious before anybody thinks, Les thinks Orange Cassidy looks like Roman Reigns. But yeah, I mean, this is it's a as I call him, Orange Goldberg. It's a ridiculous. Listen, I'm not saying he doesn't entertain people. I'm not saying he's not fun for them to watch. But I'm seeing the same match every title defense. Right? We put our hands in our pockets. We do the drop kick, kick, kip up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then we go back to selling like crazy. But we never. And we get hit with devastating finishers, but we always kick out, and then we go back and go to sleep.
Two tombstones this week, and he just popped right up.
And the first one was 2 seconds into the match. And I thought, excuse me, the first word starts with V and the second word starts with an S.
Yes, there you go.
Come on. No, listen, okay, I understand, for those listening, yes, Les Thatcher is not senile yet, and he's not in dementia. He understands wrestling is a show. It is a work. But could there be some semblance of a believability in that work? Or should we just call it a circus act? And I know somebody's going to now on the board say, it's not a circus. Okay, whatever. But yeah, this is a match that, I don't know. If Orange Goldberg gets between Cage and Big Bill, he'll be squashed that.
Well, there's only, to me, when I look at this lineup, outside of Cassidy retaining, there's only two potential candidates to win this thing. And that would be Jay White and Ricky Starks. And for one of them, a win would be a good way for them to continue the issue that they've been having. So I'm going to say Ricky Starks, which will only piss Jay White off and will move in another direction.
All right. Well, you know what? It would, at least then they may, might have to tell people who Jay White really is.
Well, that's, how about
I'm
that?
Waiting for some strong back. You know, we were talking about the build for the four, the pillars match, right?
Yeah.
Why not give somebody, this guy has got a long, strong history with New Japan. That doesn't mean everybody that comes to your AEW show or watches your AEW show on television watches New Japan. They don't. So talk about video packages. How about you have a working relationship with New Japan? Why not get a couple minutes of his matches there, title matches and so forth, and air them? Now we know, damn, Jay White is, hey, what? Okay, this guy's a contender. And he comes in as that, right? You know he's starting. Run a few clips like that a few weeks to give him, and then he has a match and gets a strong win, not with some guy who's just been on Dark four times and Jay gives him 9,000 chances. No. Jay goes out there and doesn't, it's not a squash, but Jay in a timely fashion, 5 minutes maybe, beats this guy, is dominated through the whole thing. Now you've established who Jay White is, and we can move forward from there. Make sense?
Makes perfect sense to me.
Me too. Maybe that's why it doesn't make sense to anybody else. I don't know.
So who are you picking for this thing?
I don't know. You know, those are... I figured maybe they'd bring Cassidy out of this thing to hold his win streak.
Oh, Zach. God.
And if they do, I'll wonder what kind of drugs the writers of this match are. I'm just being, trying to be funny now and facetious. No, you know what? You make... Okay, I think I would go with Jay White before I go with Starks, but Starks has yet to get over. I mean, he's got a fan base, but he's not over like I would want him to be from the way they have pushed him. And I think part of that is his promos are more heelish. He's still doing his heelish moves, but yet he's looking for sympathy and support on a, you know, from a babyface fan base. So he needs to lean a little more in that direction. So I'll go with Jay White.
That takes us to the ladder match for the TNT title, which is one of those things that has had us scratching our heads about AEW since day one. First match between Wardlow and Christian Cage, and of course, it's a stipulation match. But if it's going to be one, then you want a ladder match with Christian Cage. That's a guy who can definitely get you through it and make everybody look great in the process. Does the TNT title stay with Wardlow? Well, I say, let's look at the corners. Maybe that's part of the reason for the ladder match first time out on obviously a pay-per-view weekend. You've got Arn Anderson in one corner, Luchasaurus in the other. At this point in both of their lives, advantage Christian Cage. So I would imagine that his help is going to outdo Wardlow's help and we'll have a new champ.
Well, that's a possibility. And you know what? If they're building this right, they've got to mention that Christian Cage has been in how many damn ladder matches?
They'd better.
I mean, if you don't, and you know, here's, you know, to me, one of the silliest things is now you can say in another promotion, you don't have to say WWE. People already know he's from WWE and he's from Impact and he's from wherever and wherever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's already, it's not like we can't mention that because we don't want to advertise for them. You don't have to advertise for them. They are drawing more people than you are. It's okay. But you get my point?
I do, I mean, yes.
Yeah. So, yes, that's why this, even because Christian Cage is older, he's more experienced, but he's also smaller and not as strong as Wardlow. I mean, Christian Cage hasn't knocked out 20 security guys in 5 minutes, has he?
He has not, to the best of my knowledge.
No. But yes, he is the master of the ladder matches in this, at least against Wardlow. So yes, that should be the story here, and it should be the hard sell. Is Wardlow out of his Wardlow, this is the last thing Wardlow needs to do, is get in a ladder match with a guy who has won how many? I don't know. They're going to make a number up anyway, right? He's won 10 ladder matches.
That's possible.
Wardlow's never been in a ladder match. Well, then who's got the edge here? We know. And then you've got a story.
So I'm going with Crystal. How about you?
I'm going to go with Christian Cage, too, and I should.
All right, we're in agreement on that one. What about this match for the AEW Women's Championship? Jamie Hayter versus Toni Storm. Hayter apparently nursing some kind of shoulder issue. Toni playing it coy on the conference call this week about her not being cleared last week and whether or not she'll be ready for this weekend. I presume she'll be ready. Otherwise, we might have heard about it by now. So with that being said, do you think now, well, I'll put it this way. If the shoulder issue is legit, and we have no reason at this moment to doubt it, does that tilt things in favor of Storm? Because the last thing you want is what happened with Thunder Rosa, who ended up retaining the title in a match and was too injured to continue defending the championship. You want to maybe just play it safe and have Toni Storm win this?
Well, you know what? As long as they keep Saraya and Ruby out of the day, I mean, their female NWO thing is, I don't think it's not over with me. I can't speak for the rest of the world. Toni Storm. And you know what? Hayter loses, then they, you know, well, you know, she's had this lingering energy. She didn't want it. She didn't want to talk it. And this is what she, so then they've got a built-in return when she comes back off that injury. Do they not?
They do indeed, for sure.
You know, so that, yeah, so that makes sense. Yeah, Toni Storm gets the win. And I would say, especially if you're going to play off that that injury angle, then she shouldn't need her entire group, what the hell do they call them?
The Outcasts, right?
The Outcasts, yes, they are. And, you know, so she shouldn't need the whole Outcast group to get the win because of the injury. And then a Hayter comes back and says, hey, I'm 100%. Let's do this again.
Well, we'll see what happens.
So we're
Sunday.
Both going to take Storm here, right?
We are both going to take Storm. I feel like
it's
kind of
scary. This is actually, for those listening, that damn Vic always beats me in these picks. And so this is my way of at least getting a draw. If I pick everything he picks, he can't beat me, right?
Well, let's see if we agree on this AEW tag team title match. FTR defending against Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. Karen Jarrett making her appearance and her presence known in the last week. Mark Briscoe as guest referee, which definitely shakes things up a little bit. We saw Mark having some issues with FTR, obviously with that pile driver where Dax was not aware. He was blinded a couple of weeks ago, and he was hoping to let bygones be bygones. Mark was having none of it. In fact, he was handing out slaps to everybody except Jay Lethal. And here's the one thing I did like about that whole scenario this week with Mark Briscoe looking at all his friends and thinking, what the hell is really going on here with friends like this? Who needs enemies? He stopped short of putting his hands on Jay, says, you're still my guy, but I'm tired of this nonsense. So now there's some sort of now spoken pressure on Jay Lethal. Like, where is this going? Is Jay pushing Mark? You know, he's trying to use Mark as a wedge between everybody and sort of run interference and have people distracted so that they're not at their best for this tag team title match. But now you're in a situation where maybe Jay Lethal shows himself to be a little less of a heel than usual. Perhaps he's worried about losing his friend in Mark Briscoe, and perhaps that plays into this.
Well, if they go that way, I think that would end up making a great story. Lethal and Mark as a team.
Yeah.
And that would put Jarrett with who? I don't know.
Jarrett's got Karen. He's won.
Right. We had to fit her in, right? I mean,
he's already a winner.
Cody's wife's gone. We got to have somebody else. Well, you know what I'm going to say here is little subtlety that I saw with Mark Briscoe is the fact, yeah, he did. He stopped and spoke to Jay, but he shunned Jarrett and the rest of that crew.
Yes, he did.
As he did FTR. So he was sort of a neutral guy, right? But does he help Lethal and Jarrett win the titles, and if he does, I will be screaming obscenities at the top of my lungs in front of the television. No, if they're going to put the, if they're going to take the straps off FTR right away, then Tony Khan can, I don't even want to tell you what I'm thinking of him and the rest of his crew. But I'm thinking, is Mark going to double cry, you know, going to help them win because Lethal being his buddy?
Well, that mean you don't have that situation end the way it did with him telling Jay, you know, you're still my guy, but this is just nonsense, without there being a situation in this match where Mark's going to have to make a decision about whether or not he's all in with Jay, doesn't he?
Yes, absolutely. And if it's Jay being pinned by one FTR, will he count the numbers? Or if Jay is pinning and the shoulder comes up on two and he's going to count three anyway? I don't know. But that's what I'm afraid of. And FTR, they've had the belts at least 15 minutes now, right?
Yeah, time to get rid of them.
Yeah, it certainly is. We can't have FTR look too damn good here since they are the best tag team on this roster. Let me repeat that. FTR is the best tag team on this roster. I didn't say they're the best acrobatic team. I didn't say they're the funniest team. I said they're the best wrestling tag team on this roster. And now we can move forward.
Are you picking FTR or are you going to take Lethal and Jarrett?
I want to pick FTR because you figure Lethal and Jarrett have got two guys behind them, so you're going to have all the outside interference. But then the same with Briscoe. I don't know which way to go. I want to see FTR retain. I'm just not sure. I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and take FTR.
I am as well. I expect them to retain this one.
I hope so. I hope it doesn't go the way I'm afraid it might.
Although I think Jeff Jarrett crowing about being a champion in AEW in 2023 might be fun.
Okay, you say so.
I'll enjoy the promo and just the structure.
Get rid of that stupid friggin' guitar.
Never. Christ. No, if it's not gone now, it's never leaving.
Oh, okay, that's right. I wonder if they sleep with that. I wonder if the guitar lays between him and Karen.
It better not. What? Anyway,
I'm being funny here, people.
Well, no, but now we need a vignette with them at home and her complaining about the damn guitar.
And the guitar has a chair at the dinner table.
Yes,
right?
Of course. It has to.
Oh, wow. No, we are not on drugs today for those listening.
The guitar gets the easy chair in front of the big screen TV. Come on. We can do this.
And it rides shotgun when Jeff drives a car and Karen sits in the back seat.
Without, of course, yes. And he makes it a point to let her get herself into the back seat while he straps in the guitar.
The guitar.
Yes. Yeah.
In case of a wreck, the guitar did get broke.
Of course, you've got to have, come on.
All right, that's enough.
We're moving on. Yeah. Adam Cole and Chris Jericho, an unsanctioned match. And I did not have Sabu on my 2023 AEW bingo card, so I'm not going to be calling bingo anytime soon. But Sabu is here. He is the special enforcer in this match. I don't know how that necessarily evens the odds for Adam Cole, and it didn't really this week, but I guess the heels ran away from the babyfaces, as they should, so it worked out there. Yeah. But as the special enforcer here, should we discount the fact that Chris Jericho and Sabu have decades worth of history from their days in ECW? Are we sure that Sabu is going to call things down the middle here?
Well, we can't discount it from the match before this, can we?
No.
So we can't discount it here either, right? Are these matches similar to you?
Well, in terms of having a show with two different matches, well, technically, you know, he's not the referee. He's a special enforcer.
Right. Which means what exactly?
I have no idea.
He's going to clothesline Cole so Jericho can pit him. Okay. No, I think, here's the thing I think, though. All right. This is the first big, meaningful match that Adam has had back. He's got to get his hand raised here. Even if it's on a fluke. I mean, what I say by that, even if it's Jericho getting disqualified because, I don't know, because one of the Jericho-holics, but one of the appreciation society runs in to help out or something. But yeah, I think Adam needs to, I mean, he gets, you know, it's his first huge match back. Give him the win.
So let me float a conspiracy theory here. There was a story in the last week or so that there was something that did not make Dynamite last week, which was a Britt Baker promo, something along the lines of MJF backstage with Renee and Britt Baker getting involved, making the point that when Adam Cole is done with Chris Jericho, you're next, pal. And that ended up being taped, but did not air. So conspiracy theory here. Perhaps it did not air because we've decided that Chris Jericho is winning this match and Adam Cole is not going to be rushing off to MJF after this weekend?
Or it could be that Britt tipped their hand and they were afraid that someone would believe her.
That it would just be too much of a giveaway for the match?
Yeah, maybe.
That could be, yeah, sure.
But I mean, Jericho can get his hand raised here, but to me, I would put Adam over. I mean, he doesn't have to beat Jericho like a drum and pin him in the middle, but he needs to get his hand raised here.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Sabu throwing a chair in Chris Jericho's face to help win this thing.
Sure.
So, I mean, either way, but I agree with you. I'm going to go with Adam Cole, so this is scary. The agreement continues here. And that brings us to a match that I think a lot of people would, with all due respect to everybody in the four-way for the AEW Championship, I think a lot of people who are going to Double or Nothing this weekend are hanging their hat on this one. The Elite, Omega, the Bucks, and Hangman Adam Page against the Blackpool Combat Club, Moxley, Danielson, Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta, Anarchy in the Arena. Mox promising that if you are squeamish at all about blood over the last few weeks with what he's been doing, you ain't seen nothing yet. So I'm sure that's not only a threat, but a promise.
Sure it is. Yes.
Having said that,
you know what I got to start watching closer?
What's that?
Is the way Mox is throwing his punches and obviously missing quite a few because Cornette mentioned, that how sloppy he had noticed. And I thought, I hadn't paid that close of attention. But I will. I will start. I hope it, I don't want to see John pop up on botched spots. I don't want to see anybody pop up there because that's just bad for the business in general, not just the person who pops up there. But, I don't know. I'm going to say there's going to, but you know what? The children on the other side need to bleed a little bit too.
Yeah. We did not mention this at the time. We just talked about how good the numbers were for that closing segment of the cage match between Moxley and Omega. I mean, the idea was Callis hit him with a screwdriver and there was like a trickle from Omega's forehead.
Yeah.
I mean, need blood every week, but I do have an expectation that when you get hit with a screwdriver, it's closer to Great Muta than what we got.
Yeah. I don't know why, but you know what? Here's the crazy thing. Sometimes getting blood, what we call the hard way, which is if you did it with a screwdriver, that would be the hard way. Sometimes you get less blood than with a blade.
Mm.
I saw Donnie Fargo actually wrestling as Jack Dalton one night against Danny Little Bear. And he was supposed to break Little Bear open the hard way. And Jack is good at that because I'd seen him do it, you know, Fargo. It's an art to split a guy hard way and get it done to make it work. He couldn't, for whatever reason, his aim was off or whatever. And Danny's eyes swollen. He never did get him popped open.
Mm.
You know, closed his eye, but he didn't get any juice. But I've seen hard ways that didn't bleed nearly as bad as a blade job. And so it's hard to explain. I don't know either. But I know what you're saying because the same thought ran through my head. My God, you know, he drove a screwdriver into his head and there's that little trickle. Some of the guys will take aspirin before a match to thin their blood. And some guys will hold their breath before they get ready to cut to bring the blood to that opening on the surface. So there's little tricks of the trade, but I'm not sure. Sometimes the tricks of the trade don't even work. But, yeah, I'm sure there'll be blood in this match. But you know what? It shouldn't be just John's. It should be there should be Buck blood, Page blood, Omega blood. And if I'm going to get blood in this match, I wouldn't hesitate to do eight guys.
I mean, it is an Anarchy in the Arena match. I mean, there is some expectation there, isn't there?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, if you're going to do it, boys, do it right.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the Bucks, I've never seen the Bucks bleed. I know that doesn't mean they don't have blood. It means, and now I've known some pretty tough dudes in this business that would tell you, I don't do blade jobs. So I don't know. But yeah, I don't think you'll see all eight guys bleeding, but, and this is just going to be a cluster. I mean, let's face it. Is going to end up with eight guys pounding on each other and madness personified. But then that's what the match after it's going to be at some point too, isn't it?
Well, I mean, what closes the show? I mean, there's obviously the argument that the championship match should always go on last, but something like Anarchy in the Arena, how do you follow it?
You know, not the match that's going to follow it. I don't see that match doing it, and that's no knock on the guys involved in the four pillars. It's just not going to be the same match, and you don't have those, you know, the same type of guys. I don't know who wins this damn thing.
Well, either way, this feud continues, doesn't it?
I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does.
In that case, how about the babyfaces?
You'll put the Bucks over.
I'll put them over here, and Mox and the crew can get their heat back on television.
Well, Dave and Brian should be happy, and so should Tony Khan.
I'm bucking for a promotion here. Work with me.
Okay, can I get a raise too?
No, I mean
we're being facetious and comical here.
Yes,
today,
I mean you certainly could go with the Combat Club and continue this angle. Afterwards, I just figure, yes. You know, for the most part, aside from this past week where Paige gave the babyfaces the advantage, the Combat Club has had the better of the situation for most of this, what we've seen so far. So I would like to see perhaps the Combat Club have to come up with new and dastardly ways to get under the skin of the Elite after dropping one here.
Well, you know what? I just sat here and thought, too. The Combat Club could win with the help of who?
Oh, Don Callis, sure.
Yeah. Never mind a screwdriver, but he could be the guy that tips the scales.
Well, you know what? Him doing that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I would assume at some point that he and Omega are going to lock up, and we won't want to see that either. But, that might work. But like I said to you, I said it on the air, I said it off the air, I don't know Don Callis. I don't have a personal opinion of Don Callis. I don't know him. But his character comes across as a swarmy con man. And I can't imagine why the Combat Club, you know, even though he turned on Omega, why they would want him. I would give him some other dastardly heels to manage or something, because it just their personality or the personality that I see from the BCC is not it doesn't include Don Callis, but he still could come out here because he has an axe to grind with Omega. Stick it to him.
Sounds like you're going with the Combat Club.
I'm going to go with the Combat Club.
All right, we're on opposite sides of this one. Taking the Elite.
All right, be that way.
Well, those are our predictions for Double or Nothing on Sunday. We skipped right over Saturday. Don't worry, we will not end this giant-sized edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly without our predictions for Night of Champions. But before we get to those thoughts, Les, and I definitely want to ask you about the closing of Raw, because I really enjoyed that segment. But before we get into any of that...
Wait a minute, aren't you going to do the four pillars?
I thought we did at the start. We both picked MJF.
Oh, yes, that's right, we did. I thought we'd do it again. Okay, go ahead.
If you don't get enough wrestling this weekend, how about some wrestling you can download or even get some DVDs if you're still carrying yourself a DVD player around with this Wrestling from the Heartland Volume 3?
You can do that, yes. Talking about Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1, 2, and now 3. over 6 hours of content on all three of those two DVD sets with matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceovers. I think you'll enjoy these. A lot of big stars, the guys that are stars today, some are were even stars back at that time, but we had them in developmental. Anyway, you can get all three of these volumes if you'd like, or any one of the three at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And then the Brian Pillman Show's anthology, the 20th anniversary. It was yesterday, was the 23rd anniversary of Pillman 3, I think. Anyway, that's a four DVD set, over 15 hours of content. All four of the great shows can complete. 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, awards, extras running out your ears. And for those who don't know, this is the only place you can see WWF, WCW, and ECW talent all under the same roof on the same night. And those can be, you can get those at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses I mentioned above, Joe-Dombrowski.com and ProWrestlingLibrary.com. Also, Joe Dombrowski at the PillmanShows.com site has a couple of the original, these are not copies or knockoffs, of the original Brian Pillman 99 t-shirts that we sold at that event at the Cincinnati Gardens in 1999, and which has got all listing of all the guys in the on the back of the Magic, plus the, you know, the 99 show logo on the front. And he's got some of the programs from that year, which I autographed. He's also got for sale. So anyway, there you have it. And that's all at PillmanShows.com.
All right, my friend, we've still got Night of Champions to talk about from Saudi Arabia, where a new WWE World Champion will be crowned, the third WWE World Championship belt in this company. Before we get to those predictions, though, particularly the one regarding Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar, which is not for a championship. That's exactly what I want to talk about with the closing of Raw this past week. I really, really like the way the show ended with Triple H, Paul Levesque coming into Cody's locker room, and that conversation that they had to close the show, where you got the feeling that Paul Levesque was there not only to try and talk Cody out of it, but if he couldn't talk Cody out of wrestling Brock, that he was going to pull him from the match by having the doctor come confirm a broken arm and not allow him to continue. And yes, he brought up the fact of Cody's courage wrestling with the torn pec last year, but he also brought up the fact that he missed about a year's worth of action as a result. And it almost, you know, I kind of read it like Paul Levesque expressing some regret that he let Cody do this. You know, the storyline idea being, you know, I went against my better judgment once and it cost you a year. I don't want to do that again. And in the end, Cody, being the hero that he is, talked his way out of it, reminded Paul Levesque of the things he was willing to do with injury. And we're still going to get this match, which to me sets up a perfect way for Cody to lose here to Brock and set up a third match. Because if Cody wins somehow, even if he just pulls one out of the fire, the issue is dead. And whatever you've got next for Cody has to start next week. And I don't think they're ready for that. So I'm going with Brock.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I didn't like this angle.
And I'll really?
Because
yes,
yeah,
please.
Well, let me tell you why. Not yeah. No, it is the broken arm angle. Because it's not broken if he's wrestling.
Okay.
If he's gonna,
gotcha.
If he's going to wrestle on that show, you know damn well that arm's not broke. And I think they're teetering on, you know.
Jumping the shark here?
That could go either way, you know, because, well, you know, I don't like using, real injuries are bad enough. And with this story, here's the thing. If they're, you know, well, they're going to have to say, well, we were assuming Monday night that it was broken. But once the doctors really got the arm was not broken. I would want that to be out there on the opening of the Night of Champions. Why? Because then that exonerates them from saying, we were trying to pull the wool over your eyes, which is obviously part of the job of being a booker or writer or whatever, a producer. But am I making sense with this at all?
You are. I completely get where you're coming from.
Yeah. So, and with the pec injury, I'm not adverse to getting good babyface sympathy heat for Cody. But I'm adverse to pushing it too far, and I think this teetered on the brink there. And so I don't know, you know, how everybody else took it, but I thought it was a little. They could have had him hurt. I mean, like stunned, you know, something. But forget the word broken completely. So that was my only problem with that. You know, is the fact that I think it was the wrong time for that. Since he has had the legitimate injury, and now you're just trying to get some sympathy, basically. So, he doesn't go tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon, you know, which case, you know, there maybe it really is. But if it is broken, I think Dave, somebody made the mention, if it legitimately is broken, he's out for a few months. It's not like he's going to bounce back for SummerSlam.
And you know what? And so that's why, well, there you go. You just mentioned why I would keep this thing going and have Brock win. So however you explain the arm injury, whether you say it's not broke, it's strained or sprained or, you know, sprained ligaments or something like that, where he's sure. got a brace on. I see Brock here because you're either going to do one of two things now that we're getting into the summer. Like you said, somehow figure out how to make this last to SummerSlam, which is still a ways away, or you can go to Money in the Bank in June, which is going to the UK. And I imagine you want your biggest names there since you're taking the talent out of the country again.
Sure, sure, yeah. And I don't know, you know, it's you got to move Cody past Brock at some point. Because for Cody just to out beat Brock's ass is not in the cards if I'm the booker, right? I mean, because Cody is too strong a babyface and Brock is pushing to be a stronger heel, and the size difference still plays into it for me, you know? So, are we starting there? Finishes?
We are starting there. What do you want to do here?
I think Cody has to get his hand. I would get his hand raised.
Here. Wow, you do two in a row. Now, how would you do that, knowing he's going in there, storyline at least, nursing an injury, and you've already done the finish where he pulled one out of the fire?
Well, he didn't have to pull it out of the fire. You know, he could get help here. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's the arm injury bothers me, like I say. To rectify that, you can go, you know, when I say to rectify it, I'm sure there are others like myself who say, that's a bit much, that's maybe overdoing it. I don't know. Well, how would you get Brock over here?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I certainly wouldn't have him put Cody back in the Kimura and have Cody tap. So that's out of the picture, but maybe something where Cody actually has the advantage and it looks like he's going to win. Maybe the turnbuckle has been removed from the corner. Cody goes in some way, swinging that arm, whacks the metal part of the turnbuckle, and then gets F5'd.
Or he could get stunned and get F5, right?
Sure.
He could go.
He'd go head first into
that.
He
could be out on the floor. He could charge Brock. Brock sidesteps the post. Cody posts up. On the outside, basically knocks himself goofy. Brock rolls him in, F5s him, and goes home.
Yeah, yeah, you could definitely do that.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be totally out of the question for a little juice here. Although I'm not sure how that would work in Arabia, it's, you know, in Dubois.
That's a good question. I don't know how they'd feel about that. I think there's actually been accidental. I want to say that they've had one that was unplanned, a situation that was unplanned where they did what they always do. They come down with the glove, they put the gloves on, they come down with the doctor. And but somebody remind me, please, if you're familiar with that. But I want to say it happened once, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
I'm not sure either. But yeah, this is a difficult. And of course, you know what? We could figure it out if we knew where they were going from here.
Right.
But we don't. So it's speculation on both our parts. So you're going with Brock.
I'm going with Brock. Yes.
My God, I hate to. I'm not sucking up to you. But I'll go with Brock Lesnar too.
All right, but I will note that you are doing it grudgingly. You would like Cody to win here.
Thank you. Make a note. And I'll initial it. Okay, go ahead.
Don't think there's much of a question in who's going to be the Intercontinental Champion after Night of Champions, Gunther versus Mustafa Ali. I expect Ali to put up a better fight than most people expect. I don't think this is going to be Gunther just steamrolling the kid, the young man, in Mustafa Ali. He's not a child, so forgive me for that.
Well, next to Gunther, he looks like a child.
That's not unfair.
We all do.
But I do expect this to be a strong title defense for Gunther, where Ali holds his own for a while, and it's a competitive match, but Gunther retains.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
So they didn't do this at WrestleMania, and I'm just going to keep picking it until they do it. Bianca Belair and Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. I'm just going to keep picking Asuka until she wins.
You know what? This could be the place and the time. God, I hate to agree with you here, too.
Well, I mean,
but I was thinking, when I was looking at this list this morning, I thought, damn it, it's time. Asuka has earned a right. There's no two ways about that. Whether it will happen or not here, I don't know. But, yeah, I'm going to take Asuka as well.
And credit to her, because, the way she was used in NXT is far, far different than the way she's been utilized in WWE. And she's managed to overcome all these obstacles seemingly two or three different times to get her way back to the top of the card on the women's side. And to see her here again with this opportunity, I feel like if she were to lose here, then it would be back down to the, the lost in the shuffle again. And I don't want that for her. So I'm hoping that she'll win here.
Yeah. Me too. Now, the bloodline is Sammy and KO.
Yes.
I'm not sure here. I am just not sure here. But I don't want Roman. Roman doesn't need tag team.
I was going to say, when we spoke about this last week, you were down on the idea of the bloodline winning the titles here.
Yes, I still am, because Roman doesn't need three belts. Right? In fact, somebody give Sammy and KO a helping hand here and they get the win?
Are the Usos making this trip, or are they going to be told to stay home?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I was thinking what would be a hell of a finish, I mean, in terms of the fan reaction should be, is if Riddle were to come out and trip Roman up and Sammy gets the pin by putting Roman's shoulders down for three.
It would be a big deal.
I saw this morning on Twitter, Sammy in robes at the praying wall.
Yes, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Like I say, the main thing is, to me, Roman does need three belts or two extra belts for Paul to carry around. And I can't see it being long-term. And then what do you do? Today I'm defending my heavyweight championship, and then later in the tag team match, we're defending our tag title. Or if they were to win them and then he relinquishes it because he can't carry it, I don't like that either. So some way, shape, or form, I think we got to get Kevin and Sammy's hands up.
I say the Usos disobey some kind of direct order and inadvertently cost Roman the win here. I'm going to go with your setup of Sammy pinning Roman, and the first pinfall reign suffers in goodness knows how long. Ends up being in a tag match, which isn't exactly how I draw it up if you told me how do we do this with Roman Reigns, who hasn't been pinned in like 1,000 days. But
right.
Time, opportunity, situation, and what you've got going on with the bloodline, I think it works well here. So I'm going to say the Usos get themselves in more hot water by some sort of mistake that cost the bloodline the win here.
But, to get your world champion beaten in a tag match to set up a title, is as old as I am.
Oh, without question. The only reason I would even remotely question it here is because it's been so long since he's been pinned.
Oh, no, I know. But I just think it, my God, that, you know, I go back with Thez loses a fall in a tag match and then comes back to the same town later to beat the guy who beat him in the tag and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's great. I'm going to tell you in the freaking match, my friend Jim and I have decided someone of us has to start keeping track of how many times Seth freaking Rollins is repeated by the announcers. And I thought, why don't the announcers show some familiarity with the people they're talking about? Like Seth did this or Rollins did that. But Seth freaking Rollins.
That's a
Seth freaking Rollins didn't do that.
You know
Seth
what that is? Rollins. I'm gonna tell you right now exactly what that is. That is 40 plus years of being programmed by Vincent Kennedy McMahon. He may not have a set of a headset on right now. It may be even Paul Levesque in people's ears saying Seth freaking Rollins, but it's because he got it from Vince. You can't just say somebody's first name or their last name with Vince McMahon. It's always the full thing with the nickname. That's just one of his things.
And with ex wrestlers. Sitting on in the color seat, to me, they should be showing personal involvement with these people, right?
Yeah,
I mean that's why they're there. Hey, this guy's an ex-wrestler. Instead of just repeating the tagline or the company stance on a thing, so. I'm going to say I would put the strap on AJ here for the simple reason he's held more world titles than any of these guys in different companies, I think. But more importantly, he's just coming back off an injury. So he needs to bump a lot more than Rollins does, I think.
That is not what I expected you to say. I thought we were going to be in agreement that Seth, who has just been so committed to the company these last few years, was going to get a championship here. By the way, speaking of video packages, we were so complimentary of AEW's with their four pillars, and rightly so. I really like the sit down with Seth this week, explaining all sorts of things, including his relationship with Roman Reigns.
You're right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Lord knows WWE is the king of video packages. Aren't they? I mean, they have been in years gone by.
Yes.
So yeah, they do that better than anybody.
Here's my only question regarding AJ winning, because obviously I have zero issue with AJ Styles being a champion in WWE. What do you do now? Is AJ Styles now property of Raw, even though he was drafted to SmackDown? Because then I would leave all three titles on the blue brand.
Shit, I don't know. Now you're creating a problem for me. Damn it, man. I don't damn the blue brand and the red brand. That sounds like a political.
Well, it does. You're right. But that's the thing. You know, does AJ have to move to Raw? Is he the one exception who floats between both brands? And then what are we supposed to presume about Roman, since he would refuse to do that seemingly while AJ does it?
Well, you know what? There is no consistency in any of that, is there?
That's the thing.
So something is going to be extremely inconsistent, but then we're talking about the professional wrestling business, aren't we?
Well, there is that.
There is that, yes. Well, you could move AJ. I see your point. I certainly do. But I'm thinking AJ's coming off an injury. And, they're going to have a hell of a match. There should be no doubt about that. But I just thought it would be more beneficial to him than it would be Rollins.
I mean,
because Rollins is the crazy thing is I hate Rollins's laugh, as you know, and his mother dresses him funny all the time. But he's getting over as a babyface for some reason.
He is. That's true.
I'm scratching my head, but I'm thinking, yeah, he's. I mean, it's happening.
I think it's just one of those things where the people have seen the level of commitment here and want to reward him.
Well, maybe that's true, too. Yeah, maybe that's true, too. And I'll tell you what, AJ has got a couple buddies in his stable, Roman and the Usos against those the other three. That would be a hell of a show.
That would be an interesting direction for them to start going in on SmackDown for sure. And I guess you could make the argument that AJ having that other championship and Roman maybe eyeing it would be something that would be worth looking into.
And I know we're not going to have a lot of time to dig into this deep, but I thought, talk about honesty in advertising or honesty in doing interviews. AJ saying, hey, it is a secondary title.
I did appreciate that. I did like the spin he put on it, though. He didn't duck the idea that it was secondary in talking to the New York Post this week, in case you hadn't seen it. But he talked about going out there and making it something other than secondary by showing up and giving your all each and every night and proving it against the best that it's not secondary because you're the guy who has it.
You know what? Some of the competition like that that you don't hear, actually the guys don't do interviews for or stuff, you know, like, okay, I've got to go out there and have a better match than those guys tonight because we're newer on this block, you know, or on this brand or whatever. It happens all the time. But yeah, and I see his point, you know, so. I didn't see the interview or had read it, but I think it's a hell of an interview.
Yeah, no, basically he said, of course, it's only natural for everyone to see it as secondary right now. But once you see me with it, you know, presuming that he was going to win, and you see what I do with it, you will quickly understand there is nothing secondary about me, which means there's nothing secondary about this title.
You're right. Man, this is a tough call. You're messing my old head now, damn it.
Well, I'm sticking with Seth here. I think they're going to keep it on the opposite brand.
Okay. All right. I had forgot about the blue brand and the red brand. I'm going to stick with AJ. I don't know why, but I am. So you can beat me. I'm trying to give you the win here.
I accept all gifts.
I do too, by the way. If you're going to throw money, throw dollar bills. They don't hurt as much when they hit as... the coins.
It's like Bobby Heenan would say, you won't offend me with cash.
Yeah, right.
Oh my goodness. All right.
That pretty much covers us for today.
I believe that covers every single thing except speaking of email addresses, at least you're the one who gets to give out your email address. So if somebody wants to send you a gift, you've got the,
well, you can give yours out too, if you want.
I suppose I could, but you know, I probably would end up doing the corporate one. And then I'd get an email from some pocket pencil pusher. Like, who are these random emails you're getting? What's going on here? In any event, it is important though, that your email address is out there because your calendar is open for the summer.
Yeah. Yes. I enjoy doing seminars or weekend training camps. And if you're interested in booking me for those, you can reach me, Les Thatcher, 28@gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to send you out that information on how to, what I do at these things, the cost and everything. I will promise you that it's all hands on. And if you were to book me for any of these things, that I will give the people involved, the people attend, send them home with some tools to help improve their wrestling and hopefully the promotion's drawing. So drop me a line at lesthatcher28@gmail.com.
All right. Hey, you know what? Actually, no, you haven't been keeping up with this. I have to get on that. Get myself caught up on that Apple TV series with the Monster Factory. I just saw one of their
me too
posts on Instagram. And I'm just so happy that that's been doing really well on Apple TV. And I have had a chance to see some of the stuff that people have been writing about and saying about it. And just in the field of entertainment outside of wrestling, you know, television websites and such have been talking about this series in a very positive manner. And, you know, Danny runs a fine, upstanding organization in South Jersey, so I expect nothing less. But apparently it's been as good as advertised, not just for wrestling fans, but for non-wrestling fans as well.
And I'll tell you what, I saw that Mike Johnson had Twitch, the young man that one of the guys featured in that. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, you came to a couple of the camps we did there. This young man has Terrence, but he is just a sweetheart of a kid, works his butt off. I mean, he is as committed as anybody. And I mean, I so admire and appreciate him, and he's a part of this. Yeah, I do want to see that. I truly do, and I've heard like you a lot of positive things about it, and you know, it should be a goodie, And Dark Side of the Ring's coming back with a bunch of stuff too. Now,
yes, right? A number of new episodes of Dark Side of the Ring. Oh my goodness, I saw the commercial the other day. I probably should have written it down. I did see that the Junkyard Dog was going to be one of them. And the reason that stuck in my head is because as a kid, the Junkyard Dog was my guy. And so it'll be interesting right. to see that. They definitely had Jim Ross speaking heavily on the dog, obviously, because he made his way in Mid-South, the dog, his greatest fame prior to WWF at the time. And Jim Ross, of course, was doing so many things, not just on TV, but behind the scenes in Mid-South at that point.
Right, yeah. There should be some good ones. I know one of the producers who I've talked to several times, there's nothing I've ever been able to give them. She had called and left a message a couple days ago for me. To give her a call back. I don't know what that was about, but I will have to do that. I do want to mention, too, about the Hall of Fame in Waterloo in July, that I talked to one of the behind-the-scenes people that on the committee that worked with this. They called it to let me know about my hotel room and this and that and the other thing. And they're going to, as soon as they get the entire schedule for that, that weekend in July is the 19th, 20th, and 2021 and 22 in Waterloo, Iowa, at the George Tragos Luthez Hall of Fame there. And but they're going to send me a list of the events. I know they're going to have podcast Q&A and seminar session. They're going to have wrestling matches and, of course, the banquet. And the awards ceremony, and you can, of course, I think it's $120 for a all access pass, and that's for all 3 days. That's the banquet. That's the the awards presentation, viewing the Hall of Fame, and everything that goes on. But it should be a great weekend. Anyway, as soon as they get the schedule tight, he's going to send me a copy, so we'll have it available and mention that to you guys as well. So that's coming up. And I want to, Memorial Day weekend, everybody's going to be traveling. My God, when I came down from the storage lot yesterday, I thought it was a traffic jam coming home, for Christ's sake. But anyway, if you're out there, travel safe. Have a great holiday weekend, but travel safe and take care of yourself. God bless you guys. Thanks for being fans. Thanks for listening. And we hope we've entertained you.
Yes, that's going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly for a holiday weekend here in the States. For the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your holiday weekend. And if we're your break from the family, we're glad to be able to provide that for you. We're looking forward to getting back with you again and talking all about the big shows this past weekend when we get together again next week.